Hey friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Padron 60th Anniversary. My new personal favorite, starting with an exclusive Perfecto shape, handcrafted by one master roller, using only the finest tobaccos from Nicaragua. After 60 years of excellence, this cigar is Padron's masterpiece. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Good morning, Redding. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
In spite of the pluralism of this republic, of this society, we try to scale that and implement that in our federal and state laws. My point is, we haven't lost that. Because we haven't lost human nature. And so even though there are many challenges to reestablishing ordered liberty, I actually think it's well within our grasp to do so, even in this decade.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Kevin Roberts, president of the Heritage Foundation, more at heritage.org, also author of the new book, Dawn's Early Light, Taking Back Washington to Save America. We go in-depth today on the book with Kevin Roberts. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us.
Scott, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Very early, I think in the introduction of Dawn's Early Light, Kevin, you say this work, this book, is meant to help restore a shared vision of a glorious future for our country. Why are you optimistic that can be done despite the deep divisions in our country?
I think the most recent election that we've had, which is top of mind for everyone, is indicative of why I'm optimistic. And some of your audience, not entirely wrongly, will think it's because of the outcome. But I mean something deeper than that, and it is that ultimately you can summarize Donald Trump's victory, or the reasons behind that, as a majority of Americans believing that the American dream is slipping away from them. And what's interesting, and at least in the present tense, it's a little challenging right now, Scott, is that that's true. We know that by almost every objective measure. But what they're saying is they want the American dream to be alive again. They see the American dream as something that transcends our political and ideological labels. And from this policy leader, at least, I think public policy has something to do with that. But most importantly, as I talk more in the book about, it's also about making Washington less important by revitalizing our communities, revitalizing our families, our local institutions. There's so much of that that's already underway. I'm very optimistic about the American future.
Part of taking back Washington to save America that you prescribe in Dawn's Early Light is to go on offense, to start a long, controlled burn, as you say. And part of it is destroying the institutions that cannot be saved. How do you know when that is? What's the point of no return for some of our institutions in the country?
Well, the most obvious ones that stick out are two categories. First of all, institutions of so-called higher learning. Obviously, there are great exceptions to this, like Hillsdale, the college that I led, Wyoming Catholic College, and many others. But most of the Ivy League institutions, for example, aren't just doing a poor job of educating their students. We see that in terms of objective measures of what their graduates know. They're actually actively undermining our understanding of what it is to be an American, what our proper understanding of freedom is, what our proper understanding of our cultural inheritance is. And my point is, those institutions have a choice. They can either continue to live off the public dole, even those very well-heeled private institutions in the Ivy League do through research grants and participating in federal student loans and grants, or there can be strings attached to that money whereby we begin to undermine the nonsense that they are foisting upon their students by being more active in our public policy. You know them when you see them because of the rotten fruit they produce. But the other category would be legacy media outlets. I've been very fond in the last months, particularly as I've done the book tour, of telling people, if you get upset about what the New York Times and the Washington Post and newspapers like them say, stop reading them. Stop subscribing to them. And so my point in mentioning these two examples is you know it when you see it. And, yes, I understand that that sounds anecdotal, but you see, I'm still one of those guys who believes you can trust the American people to know something is rotten when they see it. I would say trust your gut.
A large part of Dawn's early light is your description and explanation of something that you call family-first fugitism, a part of a new conservative movement. How would you briefly define, and we can talk more deeply about it, family-first fusionism, and how does it differ from what people might understand as classic fusionism?
Yes, let me first very briefly explain that important point about what fusionism is, emanating, at least in the public square, from the 1950s and 60s. Fusionism, as we come to know it, is the melding of social conservatives, so-called national security conservatives, and free market conservatives. Obviously, some of us, myself included, would consider ourselves all in all three camps, but the fusing of those into a political coalition and an intellectual coalition, if you will, led to, most famously, the election of Ronald Reagan in 1980. And my point in the book is, as well-intentioned and as important and successful as that fusionism was, it's outdated, because one of the things that has happened during that time is that every objective measure of healthy family life in the United States has declined. And so as I talk about this new conservative movement, certainly leaning on that earlier version of fusionism, I believe what we ought to place as the priority is the family. And so family-first fusionism, as I explain in the book, is an approach to public policy at the federal, state, and local level in which we are prioritizing the formation of families. We're prioritizing the marriage rate. We're prioritizing the birth rate, obviously leaning on decisions that individual Americans are going to make for themselves. But we also have to cultivate a culture in which we are honoring those measures ahead of things like the GDP, as important as that may be.
Kevin Roberts with us from the Heritage Foundation, his new book, Dawn's Early Light, Taking Back Washington to Save America. I think I first read this in Tim Carney's recent book about if you ask Americans what the number of children that they want to have, or the number of children that is the right number for a family to have, they'll say something like, I think it's 2.7, 2.8. And then when you ask, how many children do you have? It's far less than that. So why are Americans not forming the families they want or think are desirous, even if they want to?
Well, there are two big categories of factors there. One of them is largely upstream of policy, and that would be cultural, religious, sort of social decisions that people make. Ultimately, Tim Carney's work shows that as much as we might analyze that and be pessimistic about those trends, that, in fact, as the data you point to there suggests, that's been fairly constant. And so it leads us to the other part of the equation, the other category of factors, and it's public policy. And one of the reasons, major category of reasons that Americans are deciding to have fewer kids is because of economic problems. We have a housing crisis, which Americans and the youngest generation tell us persists because of favoritism and federal policy. We have a number of programs inside our safety net system that disincentivizes marriage, but also incentivize births out of wedlock. Addressing those twofold problems, that is sort of a cultural renewal that honors marriage and childbearing and children, is very important.
Kevin, in the chapter on piety, chapter 4 inside of Dawn's Early Light, you lay out these rules that others have set for perhaps our children. One of those is dishonor your parents. And I think it was Dennis Prager recently on his show was saying how he thinks perhaps that commandment is the most important commandment of all. Why are Americans perhaps allowing or not aware of others infiltrating that family unit and teaching things that they would not want to be taught?
I think the number one reason for this, among a lot of factors, is that American parents of a couple of generations, mine, Generation X, which would have the largest number of children right now just because of our age, but then the next generation youngest, are infatuated with this concept of freedom, not just for ourselves, but also for our children. And to pass along an anecdote that I've heard, no exaggeration, thousands of times, you probably have as well. Parents will say, I'm going to send my child to XYZ school, even though I know it's imperfect and there will be bad influences, because they have to engage with the culture sooner or later. My point, both as a dad as well as a policy leader, is that's hogwash. That the God has given you not just an opportunity, but a moral obligation to raise children in His image. But let's just say, we're speaking to people who are agnostic or atheist and don't want to hear a religious claim, then I would argue for their own freedom, the freedom to do what we ought, which, even liberals used to believe in, that you want as parents to believe you've got the best understanding of what's right for your children, and why, at a time that culture and society are degrading in terms of the quality of influence that they offer to us, would we not have, at the very least, a healthy skepticism on any external factors that come into our home? That's the kind of thing that, if we do that, along with addressing some of the public policy disincentives for marriage and for child rearing, makes me very optimistic about the medium-term and long-term future of American society.
That's Kevin Roberts. His brand-new book, Dawn's Early Light, will continue with him in just a moment. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Considering the purchase of an e-bike? Why not get more bang for your buck? Redding Electric Utilities e-bike program offers $1,000 towards an e-bike and $150 towards a lock and helmet for income-eligible applicants. With gas and car prices on the rise, there's no better time to take advantage of the new cycling connections in Redding. Join the movement to save some green while going green. E-biking means more fun, more trails for your tires, and more smiles per mile. Find out if you qualify at cityofredding.org/rebates.
Looking for a unique gift this Christmas? Memory Lane Antiques, Vintage, and Collectibles in the Shasta Gateway Center on Highway 273 in Anderson has distinct treasures to choose from, including Christmas decorations, vinyl records, DVDs, vintage toys, and antique jewelry, such as brooches and rings, necklaces and bracelets. Memory Lane Antiques, Vintage, and Collectibles also offers vintage clothing and accessories, such as retro dresses and scarves, jackets and hats, along with vintage furniture, tablecloths and silverware, cookware, and glassware. And don't forget Mantiques, including military memorabilia, camping and mining equipment, men's jewelry such as crosses and rings, sports memorabilia, and collectibles. Come find that perfect gift this Christmas at Memory Lane Antiques, Vintage, and Collectibles in the Shasta Gateway Center on Highway 273 in Anderson. Open Monday 10 to 6, close Tuesday and Wednesday. Open Thursday through Saturday from 10 to 6, and Sunday noon to 5.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
North Valley Distributing, a major supplier of electrical and electronic products for the industrial and construction markets, is proud to sponsor Operation Holiday Salute on KCNR. To thank our veterans and those currently serving in the armed forces for your dedication and service to our country, North Valley Distributing at 3081 Crossroads Drive offers a full range of electrical and electronic products and services. All of us at North Valley Distributing wish you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Invest in your future with a degree or certificate from Shasta College. Get job ready or transfer eligible in programs like nursing, forestry, teaching, accounting, physical therapy assistant, computer information systems, and many others. Classes are free for full-time students with flexible hours and compressed 8-week options. Perfect for working adults. Ask about the many financial aid options available to help you turn your calling into a career. Spring semester begins January 13th. Enroll at ShastaCollege.edu.
If you're tired of artificial intelligence and dishonest news, tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday at 8 a.m.
Join Nick Gardner and Doug Janke, two hosts who were educated at School of Hard Knocks. Get a layman's view of local government as well as our take on national and world events.
If you're woke, go back to bed. You won't like us. We believe there's a difference between a man and a woman, and and I think you probably know what it is.
Tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday, 8 a.m. here on KCNR1460.com, 96.5 FM, and 1460 AM.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu. You'll find earlier episodes of this program, plus all great Hillsdale College audio we have available. Kevin Roberts with us, his new book, Dawn's Early Light, Taking Back Washington to Save America. On the chapter on the economy, unemployment is low, yet 75% of people in the country say the economy is not so good or it's poor. What do the American people see that perhaps we saw manifested in this most recent election that others, that elites don't understand?
I would, in order to answer that question, home in on one demographic, and it's the 7 million American men who aren't even looking for jobs. I mean, this to say that this is historically unprecedented is the most dramatic understatement that I could come up with. The fact that we have working 7 million working age men, by the way, of all racial and ethnic backgrounds, and they're able to be in the workforce, not seeking work, tells you what the problem is. And it is that, to put it succinctly, the American dream is lost in their eyes. And what they're seeing is that maybe they will be underemployed based on their perception of their qualifications. They may also be undervalued, dishonored in a certain way of putting it. And if you take what we know, knowing more about that group of people, and this is a vital focus, by the way, of the incoming presidential administration, fixing that problem for those men, what we're learning is that a lot of Americans feel some degree of similar feelings here, which is that the workforce isn't for them. The workforce is one where even if they believe in the free market and they love that entrepreneurs, you know, make money for themselves, they've seen the accretion of not just the accumulation of not just capital and wealth by a handful of elites, but that they're doing so in collusion with the government, thereby picking winners and losers. And so ultimately, to sum up here, Scott, too many Americans see this formerly beautiful free market system that America has nearly perfected over a couple of centuries be corrupted by people who are drunk on power and drunk on wealth. It isn't that wealth in and of itself is bad, obviously. It's that the way this has occurred is really placing at a disadvantage tens of millions of Americans. The good news, both in terms of the electoral outcome, but also what I understand to be the public policy priorities of the incoming presidential administration, is that we're probably at the beginning of a chapter in American history when we can start to fix those problems.
You talk about the ownership society and ownership economy. How can employees begin to regain a feeling that they have a stake in their company, a stake in the economy? Does it mandate government action, or can private companies, private enterprises take this upon themselves?
I'm skeptical of almost every government action, as you would imagine, although as a conservative rather than a libertarian, I do think there's a proper role for government in some of these questions. It is always, or at least almost always, advisable, prudent, and good that these kinds of solutions be initiated from the private sector. And I think about the large body of research we have of the companies for which employees love working. One of the reasons they love working isn't just because of the sort of understandable sense that the culture is good, that the pay and benefits are good, but that they have ownership in that company, quite literally. I think about Publix as an example. I have no, you know, interest in these companies, I'm about to mention. In fact, I can't, and that proves the point.
Uh-huh.
Publix, one of the most successful grocery stores in the Southeast, is growing up and down the East Coast, in part because it is employee-owned. In my home state of Louisiana, very famously, Acadian Ambulance, employee-owned. I happen to know the now late founder of Acadian Ambulance, Richard Zuschlag, and he made the decision decades ago that his company was going to be employee-owned. Why? Because it would increase employee retention. It would increase employee satisfaction. It ultimately would increase Richard's own profitability, because when those things are happening, your company really benefits. In other words, You don't have to have any government action other than just getting out of the way if we're allowing small and medium-sized business leaders to take those kinds of actions.
You say in Dawn's Early Light, and correct me if I'm wrong, but unions aren't the answer to this particular problem. There's another idea, concept, workers' council. I guess my question is it necessary to fix this problem to tilt the power in some way back to the workers?
Your claim there, I agree with entirely. We need to shift some of the power back to workers, and yet in Washington, D.C. policymaking, we often create a false dichotomy. And what I mean by that is, even though I would not only accept that claim, but I largely agree with the claim that you made about shifting power to the workers, it doesn't follow then necessarily that the answer to that must be we have to increase the power of labor unions. In fact, as I talk about in the book, I have a real qualm with a handful of labor unions who actually benefit themselves, that is the leaders of these labor unions, at the expense of their members. Mm-hmm. Most infamously would be the teachers union. Having said that, I also want to be sure that conservatives are thoughtful in not participating in the false dichotomy, which is to go one step further, if I may, and say, okay, if we're saying labor unions aren't necessarily the solution, then it also follows we're saying it's not necessarily the solution, that there is no kind of entity that would help to ameliorate the condition of workers. And I touch on this medieval originated idea of workers' councils. We would know them as artisans' guilds. I think that's something that could be applied in the modern context. I also think politically, from someone who works every day in Washington, it's the kind of thing that not only would center-left, but also some center-right, and those of us who are firmly ensconced, fairly far on the right, would agree with. I think if we can change the vocabulary of this false dichotomy, we actually might be able to implement policies and approaches that benefit American workers.
Kevin Roberts with us. His book, Dawn's Early Light, Taking Back Washington to Save America. What does it mean for our liberty in the United States of America to be ordered? And how have we seen that slip away?
We have, as I think the greatest promise of the political philosophy that founded the United States, these two competing goods, liberty on the one hand and order on the other, being put in balance. George Washington is not known for always turning a great phrase, although he was perfectly brilliant and a great rhetorician, but he was really infatuated with that very point about so-called ordered liberty. What that means in our modern context is that even though all of the signals from culture and society are telling us, and especially our kids and grandkids, that liberty and freedom are the end-all, be-all, we ought to be able to be free to do whatever we want, make whatever choices we want, we know two things about that. One of them is that that's not good for society. That's very obvious. We have to order some of that. That's why we have laws, you know, appropriate laws. But the second, and I would argue even more important thing is, in our nature, I would argue in our soul, but in our nature, at the very least, we are governed by an internal check on that liberty, because if we take our liberty, our passions too far, we know that that can lead to very bad actions because of human nature. And so, in other words, we yearn as individuals for this ordered liberty in our own lives. And the beauty of the American political project is, in spite of the pluralism of this republic, of this society, we try to scale that and implement that in our federal and state laws. My point is, we haven't lost that, because we haven't lost human nature. And so even though there are many challenges to reestablishing ordered liberty, I actually think it's well within our grasp to do so, even in this decade.
Kevin Roberts, his new book, Dawn's Early Light, Taking Back Washington to Save America. We'll come back in just a minute for a few more moments with Kevin Roberts. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Are you looking to take your business to the next level? Don't let staffing issues or HR red tape stop you from growing. The most successful businesses are those that have mastered their HR and staffing needs, and they have done it with O2 Employment Services. Finding qualified help is harder and more expensive than ever. HR regulations are getting more and more complex and confusing. For over 20 years, O2 has been providing the foundation successful businesses need to grow, assisting employers with their HR, payroll, workers' comp, benefits, benefits and staffing. Partnering with O2 gives you the expertise you need to manage your business and employees. Outsourcing your HR and staffing is no longer a luxury. It's a necessity for successful businesses, and it is more affordable than you think. Let O2 show you how we can help you reduce your HR complexities, hire the right talent, and get back to growing your business. Call O2 today at 530-223-4674 or visit us online at o2es.com.
Hello, I'm Patrick Jones from Jones's Fort Gun Shop, serving Shasta County for over 50 years. As Christmas and New Year's approaches, we at Jones's Fort would like to thank all of the men and women in the United States Armed Forces. Loyalty, duty, respect, honor, and integrity are just a few things that the U.S. military stands for. Jones's Fort salutes you.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with departments staffed with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is financial advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
This New Year's Eve, step into the magic and ring in the new year at Redding Garden of Lights. Celebrate 2025 with your loved ones surrounded by 2 million lights, live music from the band Hook, and a special New York-style countdown at 9 p.m., perfect for families with early bedtime. Enjoy delicious treats, warm drinks, and the spirit of giving as all proceeds support Turtle Bay's animals, exhibits, and educational programs. Don't miss out. Reserve your tickets now at turtlebay.org.
The Ramsey Show.
You actually can help people, and you don't help them by giving them a government program. You help them by showing them the way out. People love me enough to put their arm around me and show me a different way. I didn't figure it all out in my own head. So there's a power to hope, but that's not some kind of false panacea positive thinking way. It works. You can't positive think your way into everything, but you can't negative think your way into anything.
Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
This is Carl Bott
and Ted Leidy.
We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Our final few minutes with Kevin Roberts, president of the Heritage Foundation, his new book, Dawn's Early Light, Taking Back Washington to Save America. Kevin, it kind of harkens back to something you hear from people who, like you said earlier, you're conservative, not a libertarian. There's a role for government, but so many people are crying out to government and saying, do the things you're supposed to do. Stop getting involved in things you're not supposed to do. And the most important things you're tasked with, you're not doing well at all. This is what we're hearing all the time.
I think it's the most succinct and accurate indictment of government by Americans today. In fact, if you took the statement that you just made, Scott, and you did a very fair, objective poll, I suspect something like three-quarters of Americans would agree with that. And so This principle of keeping things simple definitely applies to politics. In fact, it's one of the geniuses of Donald Trump, and I think people even who didn't vote for Trump might recognize about him, and that is to make some complex things simple. What does that mean? It means at the local level, fix the roads, make sure the lights come on, make sure that when there's a natural disaster, you're responding quickly, make sure that there's, you know, as little crime as possible, so we have to have police officers. At the state level, the schools need to be good. The state needs to be efficient. When you go into the Department of Motor Vehicles, you actually can get your driver's license within an hour instead of, you know, having to go back five times. But then at the federal level, to your point about government not doing what it's supposed to be doing, think of the egregious example of at least 11.5 million illegal aliens coming into this country over the last 3.5 years. It actually is a problem for those of us who want there to be a transparent and generous immigration system in this country, because the incompetence, which I'm afraid is at least partially intentional by this administration, in immigration laws has actually caused Americans to wonder what the American future is regarding the inclusion of immigrants. I can go on and on, foreign policy, the economy, education. But you get the point. Americans expect that if they're going to be taxed and they're willing to agree to a certain level of fair taxation, the government at the very least needs to keep them safe. It needs to protect their liberties. We haven't even talked about the weaponization of government yet. And it also, in terms of those nuts and bolts services like roads and defense and those kinds of things, it needs to do them well.
Kevin Roberts, I'm sure you were as surprised as anyone else to hear and see President Biden admit and acknowledge the presence of the deep state in his statement regarding the pardon of his son. There's targeting going on. They're targeting American citizens. You have a prescription in Dawn's Early Light to how to deal with some of that issue. Break the power of the deep state by removing its power and or moving them away from the nexus of D.C., the uniparty, as you talk about in Dawn's Early Light. How easy is that to do? Is that a stroke of a pen? Does it take congressional action? How do we begin to take away the power or move the power away from Washington?
Look, it's very hard because it takes a series of actions, both by the president, by cabinet secretaries, very importantly, as you mentioned, Congress as well. But it's gotten a lot easier because this election, in part, perhaps even in large part, turned on the desire of Donald Trump to break the back of the deep state. Not for his own benefit, although he's certainly been a victim of it, but for the benefit of all Americans, regardless of their political affiliation. And when I was writing that chapter in the book, while I was very optimistic that Trump would win and the election would largely turn on this issue because I spend so much time with everyday Americans, I didn't see that President Trump would be appointing Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy to this Department of Government Efficiency. That quasi-governmental agency is going to be really instrumental in accelerating the pace by which this very hard task is implemented. And so to sum up here, I've gone from projecting that we will see real evidence of the administrative state's decline in power over 10 or 15 years to probably seeing in the first few months of the Trump administration. Let me be clear, though, Scott. This is the kind of thing that the everyday American people listening to this conversation we're having need to be focused on for a decade. That's how big a problem the deep state is for those of us who believe in self-governance. And so this is something that can be sustained in Washington by our elected officials if and only if we demand they keep their attention on it.
Part of the prescription laid out in Dawn's Early Light, you say, is friendship and commerce are the best means of promoting U.S. statesmanship. I wanted to ask if that can be squared, if that can coexist with the tariff policy, the tariff ideas that President-elect Trump has laid out. Can tariffs coexist with friendship and commerce around the world?
Yeah, very fair question, and I understand the premise of your question, which is there seems to be an inherent tension there. And yet what we've seen in history, although I won't bore you with the details, you know them, I'm sure your audience does, going back to Alexander Hamilton, our first Treasury Secretary, is that we have more often than not squared those competing goods. But let me use a contemporary example, and I think that this is going to be a very live example for the incoming administration, as I spend a lot of time in the United Kingdom trying to help conservatives there. There needs the answer to that, the way we square that circle, if you will, the way we balance those two competing goods, is to make sure that we're doing bilateral trade agreements with allies. And at the top of the list, the most important for the United States, is to establish a bilateral trade agreement with our most important ally over the better part of two centuries, and that's Great Britain. The Brits want it. Americans want it. Trump was close to doing this the last time. How is that, I think, the best answer, best example to your question? It prevents tariffs being foisted upon our ally, which would be bad in terms of friendship and commerce, but also in terms of national security. but it also provides a model for other countries around the world who are resisting, for example, the imposition of power by the Chinese Communist Party or Russia or Iran. And it gives the United States, it makes the United States the hub of the wheel, and all of the spokes emanate from it. What you're hearing there is at least a healthy skepticism toward the regional trade agreements, that the more countries they involve, the less the American worker, the American consumer benefits. And I think if that, the benefit to the everyday American is at the core of these decisions on these questions you raise, then those agreements are very good.
Final question for Kevin Roberts, his new book, Dawn's Early Light, on the topic of China. I talked with Congressman Michael Waltz, who's the new NSA, will be the new NSA director for President Trump. A few weeks ago, he said his number one job in Congress, he was not selected yet for NSA, was to focus the attention on the danger of China. You spend time in the Empire chapter talking about how much danger China presents to the United States. You say we're in a spiritual war with China, and I wanted to conclude by allowing you to explain what you mean by that. What's the spiritual war we're having with China?
Thank goodness we are all more aware, myself included, of the threat that the Chinese Communist Party poses to us. This is something that exists in every facet of American life. And what I was trying to get at in that chapter of the book is that we have underestimated the spiritual damage that the Chinese Communist Party does to its own people. To say that it runs roughshod over religious liberty is an understatement. But as it goes around the world, in every continent and almost in every country of the world, and the CCP imposes its will through a lot of money, there has to be, according to the CCP, an abrogation of religious rights. And this happens concurrently with a reality in American society, which is that we've become less religious. And, for example, the current presidential administration has been weak, shall we say, in defending religious liberty. That's one facet of that contrast which speaks for itself. But at the very heart of this, and to really get to the point here, Scott, is that the very premise of the Chinese Communist Party is not just anti-religion, it's anti-human, because it goes straight at the heart. It's aimed straight at the heart of what is wired on our nature, wired in our soul, and that is for us to be free, and to be free in the sense that we're free to do what we ought, which also confers an obligation to a broader society. The Chinese Communist Party wants to eliminate all of that. And we as individual Americans and our policymakers not only need to understand that, we have to be willing to confront it for the obvious reason, which is to weaken the military and economic power of the CCP. But more broadly, as Reagan spoke so well regarding the Soviet Union, to understand their very spiritual anthropology is anti-human.
Kevin Roberts, president of the Heritage Foundation, more at heritage.org, his new book, Dawn's Early Light, Taking Back Washington to Save America. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
It was my pleasure, Scott. Thanks so much.
Up next, we're joined by Timothy McDonnell, associate professor of music and director of sacred music here at Hillsdale College, to talk about a famous, well-known, and beloved Christmas carol. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Happy holidays from our Home Helpers family to yours. At Home Helpers, we are proud to help your loved ones celebrate this holiday season from the safety and comfort of their own homes. We are equally proud of the men and women who can't be with us. To the bravest among us, far from home serving our country this holiday season, to all members of the military in all branches, past and present, and those who made the ultimate sacrifice, with respect, gratitude, and love, we thank you. Happy holidays from all of us at Home Helpers. Life takes you to unexpected places. Love brings you home.
I'm Shannon Phillips with the McConnell Foundation. Happy holidays. During this time, it's important to salute our military personnel, domestically and abroad, who work to keep our country safe. It's during the holidays, that warm, happy feeling of being together with family, that we sometimes take for granted how much we have to be thankful for. So we want to make sure that we let the families and those who serve know that we appreciate their service above self during the holidays.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. So Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family-owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300. A reputation for excellence since 1965.
Join Token's radio show every Sunday at 2 p.m. on 96.5 FM and AM 1460 as host Christy Matthews and Linda Kent explore the exciting world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Learn how Bitcoin is revolutionizing finance and grasp sound money principles. Hear new perspectives on achieving financial freedom beyond broken institutions. The future of money is here. Empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to Token's radio show with Linda and Christy this Sunday at 2 p.m. on KCNR. Big and exciting changes are underway.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to find us on X or at Hillsdale Radio. We're joined by Dr. Timothy McDonald. He is Associate Professor of Music and Director of Sacred Music here at Hillsdale College. Dr. McDonald, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We are starting a brief series looking at some of the carols of the Christmas season. We've chosen a few with some good stories, good tunes. And we begin today with O Come, Emmanuel. And we'll look through the writing and what makes each of these carols special, unique. So tell us to begin with a little of the history surrounding O Come, Emmanuel. What do we know about what inspired its composition?
Well, O Come, Emmanuel has become really one of the most beloved carols of the season. It's sort of associated mostly with the pre-season before Christmas, the season of Advent, the time of about 4 weeks or so leading up to Christmas. And the hymn was sort of cobbled together over time. Its authorship is a bit unknown. Its inspiration is pretty well known, though. It is basically a paraphrase of seven antiphons that were sung in the 7 days leading up to Christmas Eve in the old liturgy, the old Latin liturgy in the early Middle Ages. And each antiphons would focus on a particular attribute of the Messiah. And so each verse of this hymn that is created really more or less from the 18th century on by various contributors, anonymous as they are, each of these verses is a kind of a praesis or a paraphrase of these attributes. And so the piece is a kind of a summary almost of the biblical prophecies of the coming of the Messiah. So it's perfect for that period leading right up to Christmas time.
What kind of message or theme is the carol trying to convey to the audience?
I think the overriding thrust of the carol is one of waiting and one of preparation and one of expectation for the promised Messiah. The various symbolic titles that each verse focuses on all point to some theological category or theological aspect that points to the fulfillment of the Messiah prophecy in the person of Christ. And so for instance, the first of these titles is O Sapientia, O come, O wisdom from on high. So this idea of God as wisdom, this kind of reflects the prologue of St. John's Gospel, where he talks about Christ as the Logos, which is the wisdom of God. And that follows up with Adonai, that is the God of Majesty, which sort of reflects the God of Mount Sinai, giving the law from on high. And then we proceed to this idea of the root of Jesse, and we begin to see sort of this kingship element that Jesse is the father of the royal house of David. And then the next one is the key of David. And what's beautiful about that particular verse is that it talks about how Christ will unlock the doors of heaven for those who believe in him and lock the gates of hell. So there's a locking and an unlocking that goes on with the key of David. And then this idea of the dawn, the day star, the morning star, the Oriens in Latin. This is the rising up in the east of the day star. And, of course, there's all kinds of imagery of the Star of Bethlehem, the morning star, the placement of the stars in the heavens by God the Creator. And then King of the Nations. This points to the Messiah as not just the Savior of Israel, the Jewish people, but that he would be a light to the nations, as Simeon calls him in the infancy narratives of the Gospel. And then finally, this last and most sort of intimate title, Emmanuel. Oh, and this is the title of the hymn, Emmanuel, meaning in Hebrew, God with us, God who dwells amongst us. And so each of these titles carries a great deal of theological and biblical weight, and they all are kind of emblems on the role that the Messiah would have.
Talking about O Come Emmanuel with Dr. Timothy McDonnell, Associate Professor of Music here at Hillsdale College. The tune of O Come Emmanuel, how would you characterize its style, and how did those words come to match with that tune?
Well, this is an interesting part of the history. You know, the authorship of those antiphons and the authorship of the actual hymn verses is completely obscure. It's more or less anonymous. The tune is likewise anonymous, but it has a kind of an interesting history in that it's got a sort of a chant-like quality about it. It sort of suggests antiquity. It suggests ancient tones, and sort of you imagine you know, monastic kind of setting for a melody like this. And for years, no one really knew where the melody came from. The man who more or less put the hymn in our hymnals, Thomas Helmore, in the 19th century, who was a great hymnographer of the 19th century, he basically said, well, I found it in a French missal, and never really giving you an attribution of it. And it wasn't until 1966 that the tune was discovered, not in a French missal, but in a French processional book for funerals, which is not terribly surprising because it's kind of got a yes. mournful quality about it, this melody, and the longing. And it's got a sort of a funerary vibe. So it's very, it's not surprising at all that it was found originally as part of a funeral collection. And so that was a mystery that was solved, but how these tunes, and how this tune and the text were put together by Helmore is really a mystery. The one thing we can say about it is that the pairing is absolutely perfect, because you've got these verses that are in this sort of minor key,
right?
And then when the refrain "Rejoice, rejoice" comes, it switches to major. So the engineering couldn't, you know, it was almost like they were made for each other, even though it's sort of serendipitous how they came to coexist.
How would you describe the arc of the popularity of this carol, O Come Emmanuel? It seems to be slightly more popular today, past few decades, than it had been, say, 100 years ago.
Yeah, I think so. There's you know, these things are tracked by hymnologists, and hymnology is still kind of an active field, believe it or not. And at this point, I would say that the peak of this hymn would have been around 1968, where it would have been appearing in about 57% of all hymnals, at least in America. And it's kind of interesting because at that time, where, you know, a great deal of social upheaval, and there's you know, culture is really changing at a rapid pace. There's a lot of interplay, and a hymn like this, which really comes from the Anglican tradition, ends up in that sort of cultural cauldron of the 1960s and 70s, filtering into a lot of different church traditions. Mm-hmm. And so it's been adopted by the Lutherans and by certainly by the Catholics. It's become a kind of, it's ubiquitous in this season, especially leading up to the Christmas Day.
In the end, what makes O Come Emmanuel such a good Christmas carol? How would you describe it or sell it to someone who perhaps had not heard it before?
Well, I think the pairing, as accidental as it must have been, of the text and the music is just this incredibly happy, luck that you have such a great melody and such a profound text coming together. It's very singable. It is less than the range of an octave, which is sort of, what you want to keep your hymns to if you're smart. And so it has a kind of vocal, it feels good in the voice to sing it. And so I think, if someone, wanted to, I remember as a kid hearing this hymn and thinking, I want to know more about that. I want to sing that. I want to, there was something about it that was immediately attractive. And I think it's that magical pairing of things. And I think also the fact that this has become a kind of interdenominational common ground, I think, between various Christian traditions makes it profound as a real point of community among the various Christian denominations that is found in this, especially this idea of waiting, mm-hmm. that really is a common disposition of all of the Christian denominations. So I think it's very poignant and it's an eloquent hymn musically and in its text.
Dr. Timothy McDonald, he is Associate Professor of Music and Director of Sacred Music here at Hillsdale College, as we talk about O Come Emmanuel. Dr. McDonald, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Kevin Roberts, his new book, Dawn's Early Light, and Timothy McDonald from Hillsdale's Music Department. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Reading businesses, listen up. Black Bear Diner is now offering catering for events, meetings, and gatherings. Fuel your team with our delicious homestyle meals that everyone will love. Ready to make your next event a hit? Visit blackbeardiner.com for more information and place your order. Black Bear Diner, your go-to for great food and good times.
Black Bear Diner.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. She had minor damage to her rear bumper. I wrote her an estimate. Later, I received the call. The lady responsible for the damage wanted to pay for the repairs out of pocket. Her insurance agent told her a claim would raise her rates for years. With our experience in the claim process, I explained to her most insurance companies would forgive a claim if the cost was below a minimum amount. I suggested she contact her insurance agent and have them review her policy. She called back very excited. It appeared her policy did extend forgiveness. They would pay for the repairs, and she wouldn't be charged with a claim or have to pay a deductible. The accident would not cost her a thing. She was very pleased. Good thing the vehicle owner came to the right place for repairs. We all pay a lot for insurance. Choosing Coachmaster will ensure you get the most for your money. Let this experience work for you. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month starting at 8 a.m. for the Gorman Law Hour featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour, starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
This is Carl Bott. Join Linda and me Monday through Friday from 7 to 9 a.m. for Free Fire Radio right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. We're going to discuss what's happening in our city, county, state, and nation. Join in. Miss a day, miss a lot. Free Fire Radio, Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.